Multi-factor authentication. This is why I kind of glossed over some of the stuff they're talking about authentication, because I knew this was coming up right afterwards. And I do talk about regular, just single-factor authentication, but the goal was to get you introduced to everything in one presentation in a simple survey-like manner. So what is authentication, first off? Authentication is a method to verify the identity of your user. So when you log into a computer, you give them your username. That's your identity. You then usually enter a password. That verifies who you are. Whether it does it well or not is a different question. But as far as a computer is concerned, anyone who enters your username and then your password is you, period. And specifically, it identifies a subject. And the reason why I use the term a subject as opposed to a user is because it can either be a user, a process, or another machine. So for most of for this group of people, you may very well run into all things. You may go work on a system where you have to authenticate two processes to each other. And that's why I used the term subject. And I already talked about the example. So what is multi-factor authentication? Well, that's literally using two or more factors to authenticate a subject. It's also called two-factor authentication. Two-factor authentication is literally you use two or more factors, so it's the same thing. It increases the level of security by making it harder to spoof a subject. For instance, if you use two factors, you use a password and you use a YubiKey, the attacker would have to both steal your password and steal the physical device. And what's better is if I have a physical device, I know when it's stolen. Now, granted, they could make a copy of some of them, but that gets more in-depth. That's one of those things. If you're interested in how those possession factors work, because there are three factors, knowledge, that's passwords, and similar things, there's more details, possession and inheritance. So something you know, that's knowledge factors. The most common approach of authentication is under this category. That would be passwords. PINs are, of course, a variety of variation on the password. Another approach is to ask a challenge response. It's much harder to do. I mean, there's security questions, but they're so limited that this is a much riskier way to go it, because you really should age out security questions, and most places don't seem to do that. This is what you used to say when I might say, "Who goes there?" And you'd give back information. And finally, you can just enter passwords. So like on the Android, there's that whole pattern tracing thing that he might be using right there. So those are the basic knowledge factors types. Then there's the possession factors. These are something you know. This utilizes an object, some sort of physical device usually, to authenticate the identity of the subject. A really simple mechanism is an ID card. Better than using something like an ID card or something that doesn't change are devices that generate a one-time string using strong cryptographic techniques. So some of these are based on time. You have an accurate representation of time on both devices, and that allows you to say, okay, this is encrypting a little timestamp, and because this timestamp is within a 5-minute window, I'm going to accept it as valid. It can also just flat out be that it generates a one-off hash that it never repeats again using a nonce, which is just like a counter or some other variable. It can be random or not random. It doesn't actually matter if you're using strong cryptography. So examples are like smart cards, YubiKeys, and those little keychain code generators that you might have seen that come with some software. You have to go type it in, and every time you want to log in, you have to type in this little string of digits. Even a smartphone can actually do this. I don't know if anybody uses Google Authenticator. I think they have a smartphone version. I think Google, again, and along with other sites, will text you a code, and you can use that to log in. And because that requires that you have that phone, you would have to both have your password stolen and have your phone stolen and have them know how to use the phone for that purpose in order to have this method get compromised. Of course, if you use it with your phone, there's additional risk that it gets hacked. You guys have probably seen some of the overdramatic stories on the media where they're saying, we're all going to have our cell phones get hacked. There's some truth to the dangers in the mobile computing because it's still new and most of the manufacturers are not providing adequate protections, but it's not quite as scary as it's made out to be, especially because the iPhone is about as susceptible as the Android. And the final one is inheritance factors, something you are, or biometrics. This relies on a physical aspect of the user, or, well, in this case, it's pretty much always going to be an individual to authenticate them. So generally, you're going to see fingerprint scanners because they're cheap to make. You just swipe your finger on the computer. Unfortunately, these are the worst of the three factors. They're really convenient because, you know, I put my finger on the scanner and I'm done. But they're easy to spoof. For instance, I've seen articles talking about how with a fingerprint scanner, if they're, you know, you've seen the ones where you swipe your finger, but there's also the kind that are just one unit and you just place your finger on it. I've seen examples where you can put like a bag full of water, a little plastic bag full of water, and it'll put pressure on it. And because there's oil left on the reader, it'll actually scan. Some of them use tricks to attempt to identify that there's actually a person's finger there, but even those are usually fairly easy to spoof. Many of them, it literally boils down to take a photocopy or a picture of the person's finger and put your finger behind the printout. In fact, here it is. They work off images, which as a result, because they're working off images, and because these images change every time you take the image, they're subject to false positives and negatives, because every time they have to interpret and they have to say, does this match enough points to where I can authenticate this user? And so there's various goals. If you want to be more secure, you're going to have more false negatives. If you want to be more convenient, you'll have more false positives. So basically, biometrics are only good as the third factor of authentication. Don't use this as your primary two if you're concerned about security. The worst part is, of course, on laptops, the most common biometric scanner is actually not at risk because it's a biometric scanner, but because the way they store the password. They encrypt the password and they use AES-256, but because they want to export the same piece of software to every country, they have padded it to where it is the equivalent of 56-bit AES, which doesn't actually exist. It's basically DES, which is really weak, and means it's really easy to break, as it turns out. So if you're using it on your laptop, you might not want to anymore, because not only does it compromise your laptop with it on, but unless you actually make sure that registry key is removed, if someone is able to infect that computer and retrieve the registry key, then they then have full access, because it actually stores the password. So here are some examples of a few real-world systems that are using multi-factor authentication, providing it. Google Authenticator, which I mentioned, it works with your phone, and I think there might be a few other ways to mention it. It uses a one-time password. I believe it is actually time-based, but I didn't have a lot of time to research it. Then there's smart cards. These are used on many systems, and many desktop OSs include support for them. These, again, they basically generate a one-off password. And then there are YubiKeys, which are not actually all that popular currently, but I really like them because they emulate a keyboard, a USB keyboard, so you can plug them into any device that has a USB slot, push a button, and it enters the password. You can actually configure YubiKey uses a one-time password by default that authenticates on their server. They provide the software to run your own server. They provide the software to modify the key so that you can use the key for your own server, to replace the key for your own server. And finally, you can actually configure it with their software to be a static key. So, for instance, you could program it with a really long password that never changes. So it's still more secure than trying to type it in every time and memorize it and everything, because you don't have to memorize this massive password, but not as good as multi-factor. I will actually show you guys a YubiKey in a few moments once we're done with this presentation. I've brought mine with me, and I'll show you what it looks like when it outputs text. So why should you use multi-factor authentication? I mentioned it. It's harder to compromise accounts because it takes more than just a leaked password now. You actually have to physically get a device. Of course, with biometrics, like I said, it's not good. And, of course, there's always the Hollywood approach to biometrics, which is usually where the bad guy removes your eyeball or cuts off a finger, which, by the way, can work on some devices. So even more incentive not to use biometrics. You'll get your fingers chopped off. So it makes it harder for a user to repudiate their actions. So if I signed into Amazon with a YubiKey, then it would be harder for me to claim that I did not order something, because they can say, well, do you have your YubiKey still? You logged into us to dispute this claim. Obviously, you still have your YubiKey. And that's not as good for the end users in some respects, but because it increases the trust in the system, in the long run, it is better for the users. And finally, it's especially good for use on important accounts such as banking, email, and whatnot. So finally, there's just a couple links of interest. There's actually a directive out there which requires the use of two-factor authentication, they're calling it. So Homeland Security Directive 12. Took me a few minutes to find a link that was not on USDA. Don't know why. Don't know why it was there first before anywhere else. That's not actually been implemented yet, as I recall. Then, of course, there's Google Authenticator. I've talked about that. And finally, the YubiKey. And the reason why I like to put these up here is because I'll be uploading this presentation, so you can click to link on them.